With Laura Fox.
Podcast.
Now, have you ever heard of a soft, squishy robot? Would you willing to have one as a pet at home? Well, Elaine Burke from Tech's Sake Podcast joins me now to talk about the future of friendship. I butchered that. Hello, you're very welcome along to the show.
I think you're thrown off because you looked at the robot.
I wish. I genuinely wish that I didn't. When I saw the static image of it, I was like, okay, cute. When I saw it moving, I physically just gave me the heebie-jeebies.
Yeah.
But okay. Describe it a little better to everybody at home about what we're talking about. This,
I mean, if you like, you can get it in various colours, but if you got the beige version, I would say it looks like a maggot because it moves like a maggot and I don't like to look at it. But like a wool covered maggot, so yeah. At least it's soft.
It's like somebody has crocheted it.
Yeah, yeah. And it's using lovely Shetland wool because they're a Scotland based company. And it has been described as robot haggis, so if that helps you visualise it. It is just like a lump. It kind of just looks like a cushion.
It looks like,
if you see a picture of
you
it.
You know one of those cushions that you put down at the door to stop a draft coming in?
Because it's like a long, oblong kind of cushion. But then you see it moving and it really changes the game. And it's called Ma. M-A-A-H. I presume that's how you're supposed to pronounce it. Maybe it sounds better in a Scottish accent. But
what are you supposed to do? Be like, Ma! Ma, where are you? It's feeding time.
I don't know if it translates well to Ireland.
Oh, I don't think so either. Okay, but what does it actually do? And who is it for? Why is it here?
Why does this exist? Indeed, yeah. So there's this idea, and it's been around for a while, of robotic companions. And even what you said at the start as well, the idea of soft robotics has actually been around for a while. And there's actually some researchers in Ireland who've done great work in this area. There's even one called Ellen Roach who worked on this thing that was like a robotic heart sleeve, but that has to be soft, and it was like to help hearts that were failing essentially to keep in rhythm and keep to beat.
Yeah, that sounds fantastic.
Yeah, so this idea of soft robotics is creating robotics that aren't all about hard metal and shelves on wheels and stuff like that. But it has found, you know, promise in this area of also companionship, like a little soft robot that is like a pet. But if you're, say, someone who is elderly or maybe you have mental health issues that you would like some little bit of comfort at home to get around with, you probably don't actually want to get a dog because they're a lot of work. And people who do get a dog do need to think about that more often. And this is like, it's a bit like having a pet that you don't have to feed, that you don't actually have to look after, but gives you all that little cozy companionship of having a pet and having a little cuddle on the couch gives you. And that's nice. That kind of promotes your endorphins and makes you feel good and that. But it can also do other things, like it, like Companion has a lot of sensors in it as well. Or I should say Ma. Companion is the company. It's a better name for the product. Ma is weird. But it has sensors in it as well. And it's kind of, they're pitching it as this non-invasive sensing for people who may want some censoring at home. Maybe they're an elderly person that you want to keep an eye on, but you don't want to ask them to wear like a monitoring wristwatch or install a camera or something like that, because that is an invasion of privacy and it makes people feel a bit like
they're losing their independence.
So the idea of this is that it will use audio sensing and kind of have customized monitoring. So they haven't specified what that customized monitoring might be. It's very early stage, this project. I think it might be a bit of a solution looking for a problem in some ways. But the idea would be if they can do custom health monitoring for specific cases for people who have it at home or in, say, an elder care home or even an institution looking after children with mental health issues, something like that, that might like to play with it and have some fun with it. It might also be able to gain some insights and create something called a digital twin. And this is also very early stage development, but this is this idea of digital twins for health. Digital twins are used in industry a lot, so it means kind of creating a digital version of, say, a system or a machine, piece of machinery or something like that, and observing it, taking data from it, and then using the digital twin to analyze it and maybe create predictions and stuff like that on how it will behave based on other real world data that they have. So the idea of doing that for health would be we create a digital twin of you, Laura, and we can predict things or interventions that might be needed to help you in terms of your health and well-being.
Okay.
But that's very early stage and I don't exactly know enough about the technology in my to do that, but that's something that I suppose they're setting out to do. And this idea of robotics in this kind of companionship mode, but also sensoring, it's not new either. And actually, there's a really interesting Irish company called Acara Robotics that does healthcare robots. And they started out with developing this robot called Stevie. Cute name. And he was a cute robot.
This is honestly where you should be going with this.
Yeah.
Make the name really cute. Make them very cute.
Yeah, Stevie had a face. Yeah. Like, he was more anthropomorphic. And they put him in elder care homes. They did pilot studies. And he did things like he did the bingo calls for them. And yeah, he arranged karaoke nights for them. And he was someone that, you know, could chat with them. And say if you're in a space like that and it's under-resourced,
yeah,
it gave more people more attention and more points of interaction than they'd be able to get from just the staff that were available to them. And he was very well received. But anthropomorphic robots and stuff like that, they're quite difficult, quite expensive to build. So Acara Robotics actually make medical grade robots that are, you know, more robots on wheels that go around and do things like maybe sterilize a room in a home, yeah, in a hospital. But one thing that's really interesting that Niamh Donnelly, who is the chief robotics officer at Acara, told me was one of their trials, I think it was in Japan, some of the staff put eyes on these like kind of moving, like look kind of like a Dyson air filter. I kind of imagine it like that, a big tall version of that. But they put eyes on it to kind of anthropomorphize it, and actually it made them be a bit more polite to it and stuff like
but
that.
But it would. Yeah, like it genuinely would, because you humanize it a little bit.
Yeah, so there's this really interesting thing in robotics where like there's the function side of it, and yeah, it's easier to not have like robotic legs if you're trying to get around a hospital. Wheels are much better. But if you do add those little anthropomorphic elements, people respond to it really well. If it gets stuck somewhere, like if, you know, because they can get stuck, they're on their wheels and they can like run aground or whatever. People were more likely to help it if it looked a bit more anthropomorphized.
even if you shoved on Ma that we're talking about here, if you put some like, you know, googly eyes, you know, yeah, like wobbly, like, and I said this to Cormac earlier on.
But then it is a maggot with googly eyes, and I don't know how I feel about that.
But at least I can make eye contact with something. I'm just looking at these weird moving ridges.
Yeah. Okay. They also said it can make noises, and the noises they described were soft purring and gerbil-like noises. Have you ever heard a gerbil?
No.
I spent a night in a room at one once because I was staying at my sister's. They make strange noises. It's not quite squeaking. It's actually a little bit more cacophonous than that. And I wouldn't like gerbil-like noises to be haunting my days, to be honest.
You're getting away from this, like, mad. But this is absolutely mad. Okay, so it doesn't have buttons and doesn't have a face. So, like, how are you controlling? Like, is it on your phone, like a remote, or do we know? Or mad?
Yeah, so they have. Like,
so I can't stop saying the actual name.
Mad. But the digital twinning, like, they are talking about having like a system where you could pull it up, presumably on your phone or on your computer, to go through kind of the data that it's detected and stuff like that. So that will probably give you some way to interact with the thing as well. And they do, like, they will run updates obviously to the technology because it's embedded with lots of technology and sensoring and stuff like that. And that will cost you quite a bit. That's something that's quite rings alarm bells for me, because this is, you know, something that's pitched in that companion space, in the elder care space, in the mental health space, and it's quite expensive.
Yeah, what kind of price do we have a price?
£350 to adopt a Ma, that's how they call it, and £100 a month for the analytics, remote monitoring and upgrades. Now, they've said that that's the equivalent to vet costs, and I don't know anyone who's paid £100 a month in
also,
vet costs.
Like, if you're not on your pet plan that you can get, I'm on a pet plan for my dog where you get free month or free visits to the vet. I utilize them. I'd say the worst thing they did was let me sign up to them.
Yeah,
but £100 a month,
and making the cost equivalent to the cost of having a pet actually negates the idea of having this instead of having a pet.
Because you could have an actual, you know, live, proper, gorgeous dog or cat that would love you.
Yeah. Yeah. That, like,
and it
wasn't,
you know, a robot.
You know, has a bit more realistic movement and stuff like that. And like, and there is, for people who like to be around animals, like there's lots of things in animal therapy. There's even equine therapy that people enjoy.
Yeah.
Like, for people who enjoy that, that can be really rewarding. Maybe some people don't know. Maybe some people would love to have a cat or dog, but they're horribly allergic. So yeah, it does give them options, but there are other options than this. Like, there's one called Paro, who's been around a really long time.
I don't want anything in my house called Paro.
Oh no, you would love Paro. Paro is so cute. Paro is a little baby seal.
Okay, no, robot. give me Paro.
Yeah, and he's been around a really long time, and again, like, found a lot of popularity in elder care homes. And he's,
again,
he just sits
because
in your lap
he looks
and
cute
and is cute, and you just pet him, and like you just feel a bit better for doing that. And you know that if you've ever had a dog or a cat sit in your lap and just petting them, it is kind of therapeutic.
It's absolutely, as you said at the very beginning of this, it releases endorphins, you know. And okay, yeah, maybe if you're not an animal person, you might take a bit more kindly to this. But I can't imagine if you're not, like, if you're not an animal person, would this be a bit weird? Is it kind of like a fancy Furby almost?
Well, the way they were describing it, kind of evolving over time and having a little personality, and they said it has primal needs as well. Like, and that just seems to be that it wants to be social, like it will actually creep towards you and want to be petted. Which all this, when you look at the thing, actually freaks me out more. But it made me, it made me think of like Furbies and Tamagotchis, and like, well, we haven't come that far at all. We still like those weird little toys.
We're just paying more money for them now instead. Like, Jesus, okay. Moving away from the physical world to the virtual, why were chatbots back in the news recently?
Well, in this area as well, we're talking about bots, but you also have virtual bots like chatbots. They don't have to be these physical things. And what you can have is a chatbot companion. So we've seen now that you can like have a conversation with like some ChatGPT or a Gemini. Mm-hmm. And you can like, you can just be asking them questions, getting them to write your essays for school or whatever. But you can also just have a chat with them.
I actually was buying flowers the other day and there was an option to have chat their chat box write your sentiment like for the card, which I just thought was absolutely wild. But I laughed because I love writing a card. Whereas I know that if Brian had to do it, he'd be like, absolutely, here's the information, you write this.
Yeah. I'd say some people probably got some chatbot related cards for Father's Day or something like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Last minute stuff put together. So yeah, we've all seen that we can have these chats. So there's this idea that we can use that also in under-resourced mental health services. Now, I would like to caveat that and say we should resource mental health services better. But they are under-resourced and they're looking at ways that they can support that with the technology that's emerging now. And chatbots can help with that in that you could feel less inhibited when you're talking to a bot, because even if you're in a room with a professional therapist, it's still a person that you may consider will have judgments on what you're about to say to them. Whereas bot, you would presume that there's not going to be any judgment because you're just talking to a screen, essentially. So there's an idea there that people might be able to open up a bit better. It might also help people who are struggling with concepts like journaling, because that can be proven to be quite helpful for people. But actually sitting down and doing the act can be hard for people, getting over the hump. So a chatbot that gives you prompts to do that practice can help. But then what's happening is that people who are creating companion chatbots are finding that people want to date the chatbots and have romantic and erotic relationships with the chatbots. And that's becoming quite a profitable, promising industry for people as well. And you can even, you can design an avatar for the bot, or it can literally just be conversation based and text based. But one company that did this called Replica, they got a bit of backlash because they updated their features so that this erotic role play side of things became more restricted and paywalled.
Of course, it wasn't that they took it away, they paywalled it. Mm-hmm.
And people said that they felt like they'd been broken up with. They felt like they were going through the end of a relationship that had no explanation. Like, one day they just went off me and I couldn't understand why. That's how deep the relationship
is. But I mean, I would understand it, because when you start to talk, we've seen so many, you know, like episodes of like Catfish and all this over the years where like people are in a relationship over text. They've never FaceTimed this person. They've never had a phone call with this person. They've just texted them. So you can create connections like this. Taking out of it that it's a computer at the other end of it, you forget yourself. You would be heartbroken.
Yeah, and it's actually, it's a phenomenon that even happens in online dating. So there's a cyber psychologist in Ireland called Nicola Fox Hamilton who does amazing work in this space. And what she has explained to me is that if you are doing online dating, and obviously it usually starts with a chat, so you connect and then you start with a chat, what happens is you actually start to build up an idea of a person in your head based on that chat, which is not likely to be founded in reality because you haven't met them in person. You haven't seen what their physical tics are like or what their tone of voice sounds like or anything like that, which can really be very different to the image you've built up in your head. And the longer you stay in that space, in the chat space, and not physically meeting them, the more likely you are to be disappointed when you actually meet them. So you're actually doing yourself a disservice the longer you stay in chat mode and not getting into the physical space and setting yourself more likely up to be disappointed and to not have a spark there. And it, like, if that can happen when you're talking to a person, you can see then how it can happen just talking to a chatbot. You create an idea of something.
Yeah.
And also with chatbots, you have to remember you're not having a conversation. You're actually having an interaction with a machine that's feeding you back what your inputs are telling it.
Yeah.
So it's more of a monologue than a dialogue. And that means that it's constantly pleasing you. It's like completely focused on your desires, your wants, your needs. So it's very one-sided as a relationship. And like, if you're having trouble connecting with people, that's probably not a good way to learn how to do it better.
No, absolutely, it's not. Elaine Burke, as always, thank you so much for coming in and talking to us. I mean, that we went in so many different directions there, but we were chatting about Ma to begin with, which we have found out sounds like this. This is a gerbil squeaking.
I don't like it.
I can understand why you didn't want to be in a room with one. 2FM.